All right, let's dive right in today. We're looking at People v. DeSena, a case that really brings up some thought-provoking questions about the law. Imagine this. You're driving, you suddenly black out, and you cause a terrible accident. Should you be held responsible even if you weren't in control?
Yeah, that's a really tough one, isn't it? And that's exactly what People v. DeSena grapples with. It goes beyond just this one case, though. It gets at how the law tries to handle situations where, well, where someone's actions are affected by medical stuff they can't predict. We'll be looking at criminal law, obviously, but also how ideas like negligence and evidence rules all come into play.
So to understand the case, we got to go back in time. March 14th, 1955, Buffalo, New York. Emil DeSena, a man with a history of epilepsy, he's driving when he loses consciousness. Tragically, his car ends up killing four young schoolgirls. Now, the prosecution, they argue it wasn't just a simple accident. DeSena knew about his condition, knew about the risks of driving.
Right, and that's where this whole concept of culpable negligence becomes really important. Basically, the prosecution was saying DeSena's decision to drive, knowing he had epilepsy, showed a disregard for the safety of others. And the majority opinion, they really leaned into this idea that a car can become a dangerous weapon, especially when it's being driven by someone who knows they could lose control.
So even though he didn't intend to harm anyone, just knowing the risk was enough.
Yeah, pretty much. The court's focus wasn't on whether he meant to cause harm, but on whether he consciously disregarded the safety of others. That's a big part of what culpable negligence is all about.
But that seems like, I don't know, a slippery slope. Couldn't anyone with a medical condition then be held responsible if something happens while they're driving?
Well, and that's where the dissenting opinion comes in. The judge who disagreed with the majority, his argument was that you can't really have culpable negligence without actions that are conscious and voluntary. And a seizure, that's not a choice. It's not voluntary at all. He said seizures are completely involuntary, so they shouldn't be treated the same as someone who's, say, speeding or driving recklessly on purpose.
So you've got these two very different views on what actually makes someone negligent in a situation like this. How did the court sort of reconcile that?
Well, the majority, they focused on the timing of when the negligence happened. They said the seizure itself, that wasn't the criminal act. It was the choice to drive knowing a seizure could happen. So they made this distinction between, you know, being unconscious at the moment of the accident versus making the conscious decision to drive in the first place, knowing the risk.
So it's less about what's happening during the accident and more about the lead up, the knowledge beforehand. Okay, I get that, focusing on the time before, but it still feels kind of blurry. How do you actually prove someone knew about those risks?
Ugh, that's where things get really interesting. In DeSena, the prosecution, they tried to use his medical records, you know, the conversations he had with his doctor, to prove he knew about driving with epilepsy being risky. They were saying, look, these records show he was told it was dangerous, but he drove anyway.
So they were able to use his private medical stuff against him?
Actually, no. This is a big deal. The court said, nope, doctor-patient privilege, that still matters, even in criminal cases. They understood that people need to feel safe talking honestly with their doctors, even if what they say could get them in trouble, right?
So even if it might have helped the prosecution's case, they couldn't break that confidentiality.
Right, exactly. It was a big win for medical privacy. Just imagine if you couldn't tell your doctor something important because you were worried it'd be used against you later, that would mess up the whole trust thing between doctors and patients.
Absolutely. It makes you think about everything we tell our doctors, how important that confidentiality is.
No kidding. And this brings up another fascinating angle in DeSena. The dissenting judge, the one who disagreed with the majority ruling, he was worried about this turning into a slippery slope. Like, if DeSena gets held responsible for a seizure he couldn't control, what about folks with other conditions? Diabetics? People with heart problems? Would they be liable if something happened while driving? He thought this ruling could have a huge impact on tons of people with medical conditions.
Yeah, like opening up this Pandora's box of legal problems.
Exactly. And it highlights this tension that exists in law between, on one hand, holding people responsible for their actions, but also recognizing that sometimes medical stuff happens that you just can't predict or control. DeSena really forces you to think about how to balance those two things.
So where does this leave us now? I mean, it's been a while since 1955. Medicine's changed, technology's different. How does DeSena apply today?
Well, that's what makes it so interesting. This case, it's set a precedent for how we view criminal liability when medical conditions are involved. But at the same time, it also raised a ton of questions that we're still debating today. How do we find that balance between personal responsibility and the fact that medical conditions can be unpredictable? Where's the line between taking an acceptable risk versus being recklessly dangerous?
It's like we're constantly trying to figure out where that line is, especially as we learn more about different medical conditions and as technology keeps changing things.
You got it. Think about self-driving cars, for example. Say someone's in a car on autopilot and they have a medical emergency. Who's responsible then? These are the types of questions that Decina, even though it was decided so long ago, really laid the groundwork for.
It's amazing how a case from way back then can still be relevant to conversations happening right now in law.
That's the cool thing about the law, isn't it? It's always evolving, adapting to new situations, new tech. And Decina is a perfect example of how a landmark case can shape how people think about the law for generations.
So we've covered a lot. The facts of the case, both sides of the argument, medical privacy, even some of the bigger implications for future legal stuff. It's been a really good deep dive so far. But there's one more piece to this whole puzzle that we need to take a closer look at.
And that piece, which is super important for understanding why Decina still matters today, is how it changed how we think about negligence in the law. Before, the focus was often on what the defendant was thinking at the exact moment of the crime, but Decina broadened that. It said, hey, we got to look at the whole picture. Did the defendant knowingly do something that a reasonable person could see might be risky? That's what became really important.
Okay, let's break that down a bit more. What is foreseeable risk really mean in this context, and how did Decina change how we look at that?
So think of it this way. Before Decina, a lot of the focus was on what the defendant was thinking right at the moment they committed a crime. But Decina kind of expanded that. It's like, wait, gotta look at the bigger picture here. Did they do something knowing there was a risk that, you know, a reasonable person could foresee? That's what they started focusing on.
So it's not just about the seizure itself, but more about the fact that Decina chose to drive that day knowing he had epilepsy.
Yeah, exactly. It's about looking at the choices they made beforehand, especially if they knew about a medical condition that, well, that could be risky. The court said if a reasonable person could see the potential for harm, but the person still chose to do something that put others at risk, well, then they could be held responsible.
So Decina kind of broadened how we define responsibility in criminal law. It's not just your intent at the moment, but also knowing about possible risks beforehand.
You nailed it. It adds this whole other layer when you think about who's really at fault, saying sometimes it's not just about what you do in the moment, but also the choices you made that led up to that moment.
Makes you think about how this could apply to all sorts of legal situations, not just cases with medical conditions.
That's what's so interesting about cases that change the legal landscape, like this one. They have a ripple effect, you know? People v. Decina has definitely changed how we think about negligence and responsibility in all sorts of areas of law.
It's fascinating how one case can make such a big difference in the legal system. So as we wrap up our deep dive into People v. Decina, what are the key takeaways you think our listeners should remember?
The big things are, well, first, it shifted how we look at negligence in criminal law, putting a lot of emphasis on foreseeable risk. And second, it highlighted how tricky it can be to balance personal responsibility with the fact that some medical stuff is just unpredictable. Oh, and don't forget, it also reinforced how important doctor-patient confidentiality is, which still has a huge impact on medical privacy today.
It's a case that's definitely still relevant today, especially with all the new challenges popping up, self-driving cars, advancements in medical technology, all that. Decina gives us a framework for dealing with these complex issues. Thanks for joining us on this fascinating deep dive into the world of law. We hope you'll keep thinking about the implications of People v. Decina and how it connects to legal issues we face today.